Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone Smoke Jensen, The Mountain Man number 34, Betrayal of the Mountain Man. Narrated by Mort Shelby, with performances by James Lewis, Tim Getman, Drew Kopis, Elizabeth Jernigan, Alyssa Wilmoth, Nick DePinto, Eric Messner, Richard Rowan, Stephen Carpenter, David Coyne, Ken Jackson, Joe Brack, Tim Carlin, M.J. Casey, Michael Glenn, Terrence Aselford, Dylan Lynch, Bradley Smith, Thomas Penny, and Johan Detweiler.
Smoke Jensen saw the calf struggling through a snowdrift. The little creature had separated from its mother and the rest of the herd. He also saw the wolves, two of them, about 25 yards behind the calf. They were inching up slowly, quietly, hunkered down on their bellies to reduce their presence. Smoke snaked his Winchester from the saddle sheath and jacked around into the chamber. He hooked his leg across the saddle horn, rested his elbow on his knee, and raised the rifle to his shoulder and sighted on the lead wolf. He was about 150 yards away from the two wolves, and he was looking down on them, so it would be a difficult shot. But he figured that even if he didn't kill them, he might be able to at least drive them away from the calf. The rifle kicked back against his shoulder as smoke bellowed from the end of the barrel. When the smoke rolled away, he saw the lead wolf lying on its side, a spreading pool of red staining the snow. The other wolf turned and ran quickly toward the trees, kicking up little puffs of snow as it did so. Smoke jacked another round into the chamber and aimed at the second wolf. His finger tightened on the trigger. Then he eased the pressure and lowered his rifle.
Don't reckon I should shoot you for doing what your instinct tells you to do. I just don't want you doing it to my cows, especially not this year.
Smoke rode down to the wolf he had killed, then dismounted. His bullet had hit the animal just behind his left foreleg, penetrated the heart, and killed it instantly. The wolf's eyes were still open, his tongue still hanging out of his mouth. Strangely, Smoke felt a sense of sadness.
Sorry I had to do this, fella, but you didn't leave me any choice. At least it was quick for you.
Smoke remounted, then rode on toward the calf. He looped his rope around the calf, then half led and half dragged it back to the herd. Then he removed the rope and watched as the calf hurried to join his mother. What had once been a large herd was now pitifully small, having come through what they were calling the Great Winter Kill. Hundreds of thousands of cattle had died throughout the West this winter, and Smoke Sugarloaf Ranch was no exception. He had started the winter with 15,000 head. He was now down to less than 2,000. Smoke's only hope to save what remained of his herd was to push him into a box canyon and hope that it would shield him from any further winter blasts. He, Cal, and Pearlie were doing that very thing when he had come across the wolves. Looking up, Smoke saw Cal approaching him from the north end of the canyon opening, while at the same time, Pearlie was approaching from the south. Even if he had not been able to see him, he would have known they were coming toward him, because each of them was leaving a long black trail in the snow. Cal reached him first.
What was this shooting?
Wolves.
Yeah, well, I guess you can't blame him much, I guess. Probably just having as hard a winter as we are. Same with all the other creatures, which is why they're going after cattle rather than deer.
Wolves?
Yeah, they were after a calf.
Bad you didn't see him a little earlier.
What do you mean?
Hurley twisted in his saddle and pointed back down the black smear that marked his path through the snow.
Three calves back there, what's left of them, killed by wolves.
Maybe we ought to put out some poisoned meat.
I don't care to do that. Besides, there are enough animals around frozen to death that they probably wouldn't take the bait.
You think they'd go after the dead ones, leave the live ones alone?
The dead ones are frozen hard as a rock. They want something alive because it's warmer and easier to eat.
Speaking of something warm and easy to eat, you think maybe Miss Sally fixed us up any bear claws?
Does the sun come up in the east?
I expect she did.
The three started back toward the house, which was some 5 miles distance. A ride that, in good weather, would have taken no more than 30 minutes, stretched into an hour because of the heavy fall of snow. The horses labored to cut through the drifts, which were sometimes chest high, and their heavy breathing formed clouds of vapor that drifted away in the fading light. The three riders said nothing, lost in their thoughts as they rode back toward the main house. The oldest of the three, and the ranch owner, was Kirby Smoke Jensen. Smoke stood just over 6 feet tall, and he had shoulders as wide as an axe handle and biceps as thick as most men's thighs. He had never really known his mother, and when he was barely in his teens, he went with his father into the mountains to follow the fur trade. The father and son teamed up with a legendary mountain man called Preacher. For some reason, unknown even to Preacher, the mountain man took to the boy and began to teach him the ways of the mountains, how to live when others would die, how to be a man of your word, and how to fear no other living creature. On the first day they met, Preacher, whose real name was Art, gave Kirby a new name. That name, Smoke, would one day become a legend in the West. And after a while, even Kirby thought of himself as Smoke Jensen. Smoke was in his 30s, a happily married landowner whose ranch, Sugarloaf, had the potential to be one of the finest ranches in the state. For the last 3 or 4 years, Sugarloaf had lived up to its potential, so much so that Smoke had borrowed money to expand the ranch. He bought more land, built a new barn and bunkhouse, added on to the big house, and bought more cattle. But then, the winter hit. Blizzard followed blizzard as the temperature plummeted to record lows. All across the West, cattle died in record numbers. Tens of thousands of cattle froze to death. Thousands more died of starvation because they couldn't get to the food, while nearly as many died of thirst because the streams and creeks were frozen solid under several feet of snow. Ironically, the smaller ranches were better able to ride it out than the bigger ranchers, who had more land, more cattle, and much more to lose. In one terrible winter, Smoke Jensen had gone from being one of the wealthiest ranchers in Colorado to a man who was struggling to hang on to his ranch.
Smoke, if you want, I'll take the lead. Let my horse break trail for a while.
The three men were riding in single file, two behind the leader taking advantage of the lead horse breaking a trail through the snow.
Sure, come on up.
A few years earlier, Pearlie had been a gunman, hired by a man who wanted to run Smoke off the land so he could ride roughshod over those who were left. But Pearlie did not take to killing and looting from innocent people, so he quit his job. He had stopped by to tell Smoke that he was leaving when Smoke offered to hire him. Since that time, Pearlie had worked for Smoke and Sally. He stood just a shade less than 6 feet tall, was lean as a willow branch, had a face tanned the color of an old saddle, and a head of wild, unruly black hair. His eyes were mischievous, and he was quick to smile and joke. But underneath that friendly demeanor was a man that was as hard as iron and as loyal to his friends as they'd come.
I'll ride second. That way I can take lead in a few minutes.
Not too long after Pearlie had joined the ranch, a starving and destitute Cal, who was barely in his teens at the time, made the mistake of trying to rob Sally. Instead of turning him over to the sheriff, Sally brought him home and made him one of the family, along with Pearlie. Now, Calvin Woods was Pearlie's young friend and protege in the cowboy life. The three men rode on in silence for the next 15 minutes, frequently changing the lead so that one horse wouldn't be tired out. Finally, they crested a hill, then started down a long slope. There, half a mile in front of them, the ranch compound spread out over 3 acres, consisting of the main house, bunkhouse, barn, corral, and tool shed. In the setting sun, the snow took on a golden glow. The scene could have been a Currier and Ives painting come to life. The main house, or big house, as the cowboys called it, was a rather large two-story Victorian edifice, white with red shutters and a gray-painted porch that ran across the front and wrapped around to one side. The bunkhouse, which was also white with red shutters, sat halfway between the big house and the barn. The barn was red. A wisp of smoke curled up from the kitchen chimney, and as the three approached, they could smell the aroma of bacon.
Yup, she made some. I tell you the truth. If Miss Sally don't make the best bear claws in Colorado, then I'll eat my hat.
Kale, that ain't no big promise, Pearly. The kind of appetite you got, you eat anything that gets in your way. I wouldn't be that surprised if you hadn't already ate your hat in a time or two.
That ain't no ways funny. I ain't never ate none of my hats.
Oh, but there ain't no danger you eating your hat anyway. Because you're right. Miss Sally does make the best bear claws in Colorado.
Sally was a school teacher when Smoke met her. But she was far from the demure schoolmarm one most often thought of when picturing a school teacher. Sally could ride, rope, and shoot better than just about any man, and yet none of that detracted from her feminine charms. She was exceptionally pretty, and her kitchen skills matched any woman and surpassed most. The bear claws that Pearly was referring to were sweet, sugar-coated donuts. They were famous throughout the county, and some men had been known to ride 10 miles out of their way to drop by the sugar loaf just on the off chance she'd have a platter of them made up and cooling on the windowsill. The house was warm and cozy, and it smelled of coffee, roast beef, fresh baked bread, bear claws, and wood burning in the fireplace. Sally greeted Smoke with a kiss, and the other two with affectionate hugs. Around the dinner table, four talked, joked, and laughed over the meal. And yet, as Sally studied her husband's face, she knew that just beneath his laughing demeanor, he was one worried man. It wasn't so much what he said as what was left unsaid. Smoke had always been a man filled with optimism and plans for the future, but it had been a long time since she had heard him mention any of his plans for improving and expanding the ranch. Sally had no idea what time it was when she rolled over in bed, still in that warm and comfortable state of half-sleep. She reached out to touch Smoke, but when she didn't feel him in bed with her, the remaining vestige of sleep abandoned her, and she woke up wondering where he was. Outside, the snow glistened under the bright full moon, so that even though it was the middle of the night, the bedroom was well lit in varying degrees of silver and black. A nearby aspen tree waved in a gentle night breeze, and as it did so, it projected its restless shadow onto the softly glowing wall. Smoke's shadow was there as well, for he was standing at that very window, looking out into the yard.
Smoke?
Oh, I'm sorry, darling. Did I wake you?
Are you all right?
I'm fine.
You're worried, aren't you?
I won't lie to you, Sally. We may lose everything.
Sally got out of bed and padded across the room. Then, wrapping her arms around him, she leaned into him.
No. As long as we have each other, we won't lose everything.
The banker leaned back in his chair and put his hands together, making a steeple of his fingers. He listened intently as Smoke made his case.
I'm sure I'm not the only one coming to you with problems. I reckon this winter has affected just about everyone.
Joel Matthews nodded.
It has indeed. Right now, our bank has over $150,000 in bad debt. I'll tell you the truth, Smoke. We are in danger of going under ourselves.
Then it could be that I'm just wasting my time talking to you.
You have a $2,000 note due in 30 days.
Yes.
What exactly are you asking?
I'm asking for a 60-day extension on that note.
The banker turned at his desk and looked at the calendar on the wall behind him.
Your note is due April 30th. A 60-day extension would take you to June 30th. Do you really think you can come up with the $2,000 by then?
I know that I can't by April 30th. And I'll be honest with you, Joel. I don't know if I'll have the money by June 30th either. But if any of my cattle survive the rest of this winter, I will at least have a chance.
Smoke, can you make a $200 payment on your note? That would be 10%.
Maybe 100.
100.
That's about the best I can do right now.
I'll never be able to convince the board to go along with it, unless you can pay at least 10% on the loan.
I understand.
Smoke started to stand, but Matthews held out his hand.
Oh, wait a minute. I know how you can come up with $150 if you are willing to do a job for me.
A job for you?
For the bank, actually. It will take you about 3 days.
3 days' work for $150. I'll do it.
Well, don't you even want to know what it is?
Is it honest work?
Oh, yes, it's honest work, all right. It might also be dangerous.
I'll do it.
Yes, I didn't think you would be a person who would be deterred by the possibility of danger. But just so you know what you are letting yourself in for, we have a rather substantial money shipment coming in by stagecoach from Sulphur Springs. If you would ride as a special guard during the time of the shipment, I will pay you $150.
$150 just to ride shotgun. It's not that I'm looking a gift horse in the mouth, Joel, but shotgun guards make about $20 a month, don't they?
Yes.
So why would you be willing to pay me so much?
We are bringing in over $20,000. And the damn fool editor over at Sulphur Springs has seen fit to run a front page story about it.
Matthews turned the paper around so Smoke could see the headlines of a lead story.
Huge money shipment. $20,000 in greenbacks to be transported by Sulphur Springs Express Company to Big Rock. Why in the world would he publish something like this?
Well, if you asked the editor, I'm sure he would tell us that he is merely exercising his freedom of the press. But I would call it idiocy. Anyway, the cat is out of the bag, and no doubt every outlaw in 3 states knows about the shipment now. Do you know Frank Simmons?
No, I don't think I do.
Well, Frank Simmons is the normal shotgun guard on this run. He's 66 years old and blind as a bat. Now, ordinarily, it's not a problem. About the only thing the stage ever carries is a mailbag with letters from grandparents, a few seed catalogs, and the like. But this, well, Frank just isn't up to the job.
I see what you mean. When do I go?
Well, you can take the stage over Monday morning. The money will arrive by train Tuesday night. Marshall Goodwin and a couple of his deputies will meet the train with the banker just to make sure it gets in the bank all right. And then Wednesday, you'll take personal charge of it until you get it back here.
Sounds easy enough.
Well, for someone like you, I imagine it is. But I'll be honest with you, Smoke. If I had to guard that shipment, knowing that every saddle bum and ne'er-do-well from Missouri to California is after it, why, I'd be peeing my pants.
I'll have the money here Wednesday evening, and I'll be wearing dry pants.
You want me to go with you?
Pearly spoke over the supper table that night.
No, why should you?
Well, if it's like Mr. Matthew says, you're liable to run into some trouble between here and Sulphur Springs.
No, I thank you for the offer, Pearly. But I want you and Cal to stay here and look after what cattle we have left. You'll have to take the hay out to them, since they won't be able to forage. And you'll have to watch out for the wolves and any other creatures that might have a yen for beef. The only chance we have of saving Sugarloaf is to keep enough cows alive that I can sell and raise the 2,000.
All right, if you say so.
Pearly reached over for the last of the bear claws.
That's four of them things Eunice had. What's four?
Cal?
What? You think I'm lying, Miss Sally? I've been accounting them.
I'm not concerned about that. I'm talking about your grammar.
That's four of those things you have had, not them things Eunice had.
Have you had four of them, Pearly?
Well, yes, ma'am. But I believe these are somewhat smaller than the ones you usually make.
Sally then got up from the table and, walking over to the pie saver, she opened the door and pulled out an apple pie.
Then you won't be wanting any of this, will you?
Well, maybe just a little piece. With maybe a slice of cheese on top.
That night, Sally cuddled against Smoke as they lay in bed.
Take care of yourself, Smoke.
I've spent a lifetime taking care of myself. I'm not likely to fall down on the job now.
It was nice of Mr. Matthews to offer you the job. He did say we would get the extension?
Yes, for all the good it'll do.
What do you mean?
We've got 30 days until the loan is due. With the extension, 90 days. Then what? We're still going to have to come up with the money.
You don't think we'll have enough cattle to sell?
Well, what if we do? Then what? At best, we'll just be buying time. A cattle ranch without cattle isn't much of a ranch.
They lay in the quiet darkness for a long moment before Sally spoke again.
I know a way we might be able to come up with it.
Oh, no.
Oh, no what?
I'm not going to let you go online for me. I mean, I appreciate the offer, but I just wouldn't feel right, you becoming a soiled dove.
What?
I mean, I have given the very idea some thought, too, but I wasn't sure you would do it. Then I figured, well, maybe you would, but I just wouldn't feel right about it.
Kirby Jensen!
Sally grabbed the pillow and began hitting him with it.
I give up! I give up! Truce.
Truce. How much do you think I would make?
Sally.
Well, you are the one who brought it up.
Sally lay back down beside him, and again they were quiet for a moment.
How?
How what?
You said you may have a way to raise the money. How would we do it?
Light the lamp, and I'll show you.
Sally walked over to the dresser and opened the top drawer. Removing a newspaper, she returned to the bed just as a bubble of golden light filled the room.
Read this advertisement.
New York Company desires ranch land to lease. We'll pay $1 per acre for 1 year lease.
If we leased our entire ranch to them, we could make $12,000.
No.
Why not?
Sally, you know why not. If we lease this ranch to some outfit like this, they'll send their own man in to run things. We'll be tenants on our own land. Only the land won't even be ours, at least not for a year.
Smoke, you said yourself we are in danger of losing everything. At least, this way, we could hang on to the ranch. All right, we won't make any money this year because everything we get will have to go towards the note. But next year we could start fresh.
Start fresh with no money.
And no debt.
Smoke stared at that advertisement for a long moment. Then he lay back on the bed and folded his arm across his eyes.
Smoke?
Smoke didn't answer.
Smoke, you know I'm right.
I know you're right.
Then you'll do it?
Is this what you want to do, Sally?
No, it isn't what I want to do. But I don't see any other way out of this. At least think about it.
All right. I'll think about it.
The man standing at the end of the bar had a long, pockmarked face and a drooping eyelid. His name was Ebenezer Dooley. And he had escaped prison 6 months ago. He was here to meet some people, and though he had never seen them, he knew who the three men were as soon as they came in. He could tell by the way they stood just inside the door, pausing for a moment to look around the main room of the Mad Dog Saloon. They were here to meet someone. The room was dimly lit by a makeshift chandelier that consisted of a wagon wheel and several flickering candles. It was also filled with smoke from dozens of cigars and pipes, so that it took some effort for the three men to look everyone over. Dooley had told them that he'd be wearing a high-crowned black hat with a red feather sticking out of a silver hat band. He stepped away from the bar so they could see him. At that, one of them made eye contact and nodded. Once contact was made, Dooley walked toward an empty table at the back of the saloon. The three men picked their way through the crowd and joined him. One of the bar girls came over to smile prettily at the men as they sat down. She winced somewhat as she got a closer look at them, though, because they were some of the ugliest men that she had ever seen. Dooley had been in town for a few days, so she had already met him. He was tall and gangly, with a thin face and hawk-like nose. He was not handsome by any standard, but compared to the other three, hell, he was Prince Charming.
Hey, girlie, bring us a bottle and four glasses.
The bar girl left to get the order, returned, picked up the money, and walked away. None of the men seemed particularly interested in having her stay around. And she was not at all interested in trying to change their minds.
You'd be Cletus, I take it?
Cletus had white hair and a beard, and as far as Dooley could tell, only one tooth.
I'm Cletus.
A friend of mine named McNabb told me you'd be a good man to work with, and that you could get a couple more.
These here are my nephews. This is Morgan.
Morgan had a terrible scar that started just above his left eye and then passed down through it. He had only half an eyelid, and the eye itself was opaque. Morgan stared hard at Dooley with that one good eye.
And this here is Toomey. Neither of them's too quick in the mind, but they're good boys who'll do whatever I tell them to do. Ain't that right, boys?
Whatever you tell us, Uncle Cletus. Mama said to do whatever you tell us to do.
His mama's my sister. She ain't none too bright neither, which is why I figure she birthed a couple of idiots.
Neither Morgan nor Toomey reacted to his unflattering comment about him.
Can I count on them to do the job I got planned?
I told you they'll do whatever I ask them to do.
Good.
You said this would be a big job?
Yes.
How big?
It's $20,000 big.
That is big.
The split is 50-50.
Wait a minute. What do you mean the split is 50-50? It's four of us.
I set up the deal. I'm in charge. I take half, you take half. How you divide your half with your nephews is up to you.
Cletus looked at his two nephews for a moment. Then he nodded.
All right. That sounds good enough to me. Where is this job and when do we do it?
Uh-uh.
What do you mean, uh-uh? How are we going to do the job, and if we don't know what it is we're supposed to be doing?
I'll tell you what you need to know when the time comes. I wouldn't like to think of you getting greedy on me.
Whatever you say.
Even though Smoke had nothing to do with the money yet, he was in the Sulphur Springs Railroad Depot when the 11 o'clock train arrived. The depot was crowded with people who were waiting for the train. Some were travelers who were holding tickets, and some were here to meet arriving passengers. And many were here for no other purpose than the excitement of watching the arrival of the train. Much of the crowd inside went outside then to stand on the platform alongside the train as the arriving passengers disembarked and the departing passengers climbed aboard. But Smoke and three men remained inside the depot. Smoke had met with the others earlier in the day when he had presented them with the letter from Joel Matthews, authorizing him to take possession of the money.
Well, Mr. Jensen, on the job already, I see.
I just came down to see if I would actually have a job tomorrow.
The station manager stuck his head inside the door.
Mr. Wallace, you want to come sign for this now? The railroad is anxious to get rid of it.
Yeah, I'll be right there.
The marshal and his deputy both drew their pistols, then followed Wallace out to the mail car. Smoke went outside with him, and he turned up the collar of his sheepskin coat as he watched Wallace take the money pouch from the express messenger. Then he followed the banker and his two guards down to the bank, where the money was put into the safe.
There you go, Mr. Jensen. All safe and sound for you tomorrow.
Yes, well, I'll feel a lot better when it's safe and sound in the bank back in Big Rock.
The next morning, Smoke met Wallace at the bank. Wallace was sitting at a desk in his office. The pouch that the money had come in was open, and there were several bound stacks of bills alongside.
You want to count this money?
It might be a good idea.
Smoke sat in the chair and began counting. When he finished, half an hour later, he looked up at Wallace.
I thought it was supposed to be $20,000.
Well, how much did you come up with?
$20,412.
That exact amount is recorded here. It's good to see that you are an accurate counter. Now sign here, please.
With all the money accounted for, Smoke took the pouch and walked down to the end of the street to the stage depot. The coach was already sitting out front, and the hostlers were rigging up the team. Stage depot was warm inside, and he saw five people standing around the pot-bellied stove. A man, two women, and a young boy. There were three more men over by the ticket counter, and one of them, seeing Smoke, came toward him. He was an older man with white hair and weathered skin. He stuck his hand out.
Morning, Mr. Jensen. I'm Frank Simmons.
Call me Smoke. You would be the shotgun guard.
Yes, sir. Normally, that'd be me.
Normally?
Well, truth is, You have that much money to look after, everyone figures it'd be better if you just go ahead and ride shotgun yourself.
Simmons held out his hands, and both were shaking.
I got me this here palsy so bad, I couldn't always hold a gun to shoot. Only reason I go along now is to keep putting company. We don't ever carry nothing worth stealing. That is, till now.
Puddin'.
That would be me.
Another man came over to shake Smoke's hand.
Puddin' Taylor's the name. I'm the driver. You'll be sitting up on the high board with me if you don't mind.
No, I figure that's probably the best place for me. Not looking forward to getting that cold.
Ah, don't worry none about getting too cold. We keep us a really warm buffalo robe up there. While you'll be as warm as the folks down in the box with their wool blankets.
Smoke went outside with the others and watched as the passengers boarded the coach, then wrapped themselves in blankets to ward off the cold. Smoke climbed up onto the high seat alongside Puddin', who then released the brake and snapped the ribbons over the team. Dooley stood on a rock and looked down the road.
What are we staying here for? It's cold up here.
We're here because by the time the coach reaches his point, the driver will have to stop his team to give him a breather. That's when we'll hit him.
Cletus, Morgan, and Toomey were sitting on a fallen log about 40 yards away from the road. Morgan got up and walked over to a bush to relieve himself.
What are you laughing at?
Look here when I pee. There's smoke coming from it.
That ain't smoke, idiot. It's vapor. Same thing as your breath when it's cold.
Oh, that don't make no sense. Ain't no breath coming off of my pee.
Wait, I'm gonna see if I can piss smoke too.
Quiet.
Think I hear something. They're coming. Everyone get ready.
Get up there. Get on with you.
Puddin' urged the straining team up the grade.
Will you be stopping at the top of the grade?
Yeah, we got to. Else the team will give out before we reach the next way station.
It took another 10 minutes before the team reached the crest of the grade.
Whoa!
The team stopped and they sat there for a moment. Suddenly, three armed men jumped out in front of the stage. One of the men fired and his bullet hit Puddin' in the arm.
Yeah!
Even before the echo of the shot had died out, Smoke was returning fire.
Puddin', are you all right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, just hit me in the arm. Didn't do nothing to any of my vitals.
With his pistol at the ready, Smoke climbed down from the driver's seat and moved slowly, cautiously toward the three men he had just shot. Looking toward the sound, he saw a rider bending low over the neck of his horse as he kept the horse at a gallop. Smoke raised his pistol and started to shoot, but he decided that whoever it was offered no immediate danger, so he eased the hammer back down and examined the three men. All three were dead, their faces contorted in grimaces of pain and surprise.
Did you kill them sons of bitches?
Yeah.
Good.
Keep everyone on the stage until I have a look around.
Smoke followed the tracks of the three would-be robbers back into the edge of the woods. There he saw a fallen log. There was also enough disturbed snow around that log that he knew this was where the men had been waiting. He also saw three horses tied to a branch. He walked over to the animals and patted one of them on the neck.
Don't worry, I'm not going to leave you out here. You didn't try to hold up the stage.
Further examination showed that there had been a fourth horse, and Smoke was satisfied that that was the horse of the man he had seen running away. Nobody else was here, or had been here. Smoke came back out of the tree line, leading the three horses.
See anyone else back there?
No, it's all clear.
Puddin' tied off the team, then climbed down.
You folks can come out now. If you need to, rest yourselves, well, there's a pretty good place for the ladies over there.
Yeah, let me take a look at your arm.
Smoke tore some of Puddin's shirt away, then looked at the wound.
How's it look?
Well, it went all the way through. If it doesn't get festered, you should be all right.
Smoke tore off another piece of the driver's shirt.
Give me a chaw of tobacco. I'll use it as a poultice.
The driver chewed up a wad of tobacco, then spit it into the cloth.
Here, too. I'll need it on the entry and exit wound.
Hooden complied, then Smoke wrapped the bandage around his arm, putting tobacco over each wound.
There's another one, wasn't there?
Yes, but I don't expect we'll have any trouble from him.
Dooley rode that horse at a gallop until he feared that the animal would drop dead on him. Then he got off and walked him until the horse's breathing returned to normal. He'd had it all planned out, which included staying separated so as to deny the stage guard any opportunity to react. But before he knew it, all three jumped up in front of the stage. At first, Dooley couldn't understand why they would do such a damn fool thing. But as he was riding away from the scene, he began thinking about it, and he was fairly certain that he had figured it out. Dooley was convinced that Cletus and his two nephews had planned to rob the stage, then turn on him, keeping all the money for themselves. Now, it didn't work out that way for him, because the shotgun guard killed all three. What sort of man could take on three gunmen and kill all three? From the moment he had learned of the money shipment, he'd begun planning this robbery. He'd even taken a trip on the stage, just to make sure that he knew the route it would travel. That's how he'd learned about the long braid and the necessity of stopping to rest the horses. But the shotgun guard on the trip he took was an old man with the shakes. He wouldn't have presented any damn trouble at all. In fact, Dooley even watched the coach depart two more times, and it had been the same guard for each trip. This guard today was a new one, and as it turned out, deadly. Dooley resented the fact that he didn't get the money, but he was just as glad that Cletus and his nephews got themselves killed. As it turned out, they were nothing but a bunch of double-crossing bastards anyway.
Folks, can I have your attention, please?
At the sheriff's call, everyone in Longmont's saloon grew quiet and turned to see what he had to say. Sheriff Carson smiled. Then he nodded toward a table where Smoke was sitting with Sally, Pearly, Cal, and Louis Longmont, owner of Longmont's saloon.
As y'all know, our own Smoke Jensen here foiled a robbery last week, and that's why we're here celebrating with him and Sally. Smoke, if those no accounts had managed to steal the money you were guarding, the folks around here would be in a lot more trouble than we are. I thank you, and the town thanks you.
Hear, hear!
Mr. Longmont, another round of drinks, if you please. The bank is buying.
I'll get ours.
I'll have a beer.
He'll have a sarsaparilla.
Hey, Sally.
Smoke cut him off with a steely gaze. Cal was about to say that he drank beer all the time when he was out with just Smoke and Pearly. But he knew that if he told her that now, Smoke would curtail those privileges.
May I join you?
Matthews came over to the table.
Yes, please do.
Matthews sat down, then pulled an envelope from his inside jacket pocket.
Smoke, the board voted to give you a reward of $300 in addition to the $150 you earned.
Smoke, that will pay our interest, plus allow us to keep the money we were going to use.
Thanks, Joel.
I just wish it could be more. I wish it could be enough to pay off your entire note.
Ebenezer Dooley was at the Cowbell Saloon in the small town of Antonito, Colorado. A traveler had left a copy of the Big Rock newspaper in the saloon, and because Dooley had nothing else to do, he picked it up, took it over to an empty table, and began reading it. There was an article there about Smoke's foiling of the robbery. The paper was over 2 weeks old, but that didn't matter, because it had been several weeks since Dooley had read any news at all. He read about his botched robbery attempt.
Smoke Jensen. That's the name of the son of a bitch who stole my money. I'll be keeping that in my memory.
I beg your pardon?
Nothing. I was just talking to myself is all.
I do that my own self sometimes. I guess when you're used to talking to a horse all the time, why, a man will sometimes just wind up talking to himself.
I guess so.
You was reading about Jensen, weren't you? Smoke Jensen.
Yeah, I was. How did you know?
You spoke his name.
Oh, yeah, I guess I did.
You know him?
Nah, I ran across him once.
She wouldn't say he's a friend of yours.
He ain't no friend. Do you know him?
Well, we ain't ever actual met, but I know who the son of a bitch is. He killed my brother.
He killed your brother?
Why isn't he in prison for that?
My brother was rustling some of Jensen's cattle at the time.
Where were you when that happened?
Well, I was in prison.
I'll be damned. I know who you are. You're Kurt Logan, aren't you?
Logan smiled. Then he picked up his glass and moved over to join Dooley.
I was wondering when you recognized me. I mean, I recognized you right off. Of course, we was in different cell blocks, so we didn't see each other all that many times. Then I done my time, got out. What are you doing now? I thought you were supposed to be doing 20 years.
Well, let's just say that the state of Colorado had its own idea of when I should leave, and I had mine.
I'll be damned. You escaped, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Fact is, you could get $500 just for turning me into the law.
Is that a fact?
It is. But I'm not worried about you doing that.
And why is that?
Because I know something that would be worth a lot more than $500 to you. That is, if you're interested.
I'm interested.
What have you been doing since you got out?
Trying to make a living. I punched some cows, worked at a freight yard, mucked out a few stalls.
Haven't found anything to your liking, though, have you?
What's there to like about any of that?
I might have an idea, if I can get enough men together.
How many you need?
Besides the two of us, I'd say about four more.
Six men. Damn, what you plan to do, rob a bank?
Well, that's where the money is, ain't it?
Smoke sat in his saddle and watched as his hands dragged the dead cattle into large piles and then burned them. It was the only way to clear away the carnage left from the brutal winter just past. He and all the cowboys were wearing kerchiefs tied around their noses to help keep out the stench. Hurley and Cal rode back to where Smoke was, then reined up alongside him and turned to watch the fire.
It's like a barbecue.
If it is, it's the most expensive barbecue you'll ever see.
Yeah. Sally?
Smoke spoke to Sally as they lay in bed that night.
Yes?
I had to let all the men go today.
I figured as much. I saw them riding off.
I even let Pearly and Cal go.
Oh.
Don't worry, they aren't going anywhere. I explained that I can't pay them, but they said they'd stay anyway.
Yes, I figured they would.
We can't do it. We've lost too many head. Even if we sold every cow we have left, we wouldn't make enough money to pay off the note on the ranch.
Oh, Smoke.
I let you down. I failed you.
No, you haven't let me down. You haven't failed. You had no control over the weather.
That's true. I had no control over the weather. But if I hadn't borrowed so much money against the ranch, we would have ridden out this winter. Now, we're going to lose the sugar loaf. And I know how much you love this place.
Oh, you silly darling. I do love this place. But don't you know that I love you much more? In fact, I love this place because of you. And no matter where we go or what we have to do, it will be fine, as long as we are together.
Yeah, that's good to know. But it doesn't make me any less a failure.
We don't have to lose this place.
You have any idea as to how to save it?
Yes. Don't you remember? I told you about it last winter.
You're talking about leasing the ranch, aren't you?
Yes.
Oh, I don't want to do that. I don't want to give up control of my own place.
But it would only be temporary. You would give up control for 1 year. Surely that would be better than losing the ranch and giving up control forever.
Oh, all right. Suppose I decide to do this. What will be the first step?
There's a land broker's office in Denver. I saved the address. We can go there and talk to him.
No. You stay here with the ranch. It's ours for 30 more days. I wouldn't want to give anyone the wrong idea that we were abandoning it. And someone might think that's exactly what's happening if we both leave.
All right, I'll stay.
Besides, if we do lease the ranch, I expect the tenants will want to live in this house. So you, Pearly, and Cal need to find some place for us to go. The line shack over on Big Sandy might work. It's the biggest of all of them.
We'll get it in shape while you're gone.
I hate having to ask you to live in such a place.
It will be fine, Smoke, you'll see. I'll have it looking really nice by the time we move in. And it's only a year. Then we'll be back in our own house.
Lord willing.
Smoke, when you make the deal, don't forget you must get the money in advance in order to be able to pay the note.
I know. Don't worry. I will.
It's going to be all right, Smoke. I know it will.
Pearly? Pearly?
Although the bunkhouse had beds enough for 12 cowboys, Cal and Pearly were the only two occupants at the present time.
Pearly!
What's happening?
Are you asleep?
Well, I was asleep.
Oh. Well, then I won't bother you.
Pearly got out of his bunk, then walked over to Cal's bunk. He jerked all the covers off Cal.
Hey! What you do that for? Give me my covers.
Well, I'm listening now, so tell me what was so important you had to wake me up.
Pearly ran his hand over the puff of purple flesh that was on his chest, the result of a bullet wound.
We was gonna bury you under the aspen trees.
What?
Last year, when we was down to Santa Gertrudis Ranch, helping out Captain King, you got shot, remember?
Well, Cal, that ain't something that you would just forget all that easy.
Anyway, we didn't figure you'd live until we got you home, so we was already planning your funeral. We decided to, Miss Sally had decided to bury you under the aspen trees. That would have been a real pretty spot, too.
Sorry it didn't work out for you. Cal, please tell me you didn't wake me up just to tell me where you had planned to bury me.
Miss Sally planned.
All right, Miss Sally planned. Is that why you woke me up?
No.
Then why did you?
I'm worried. What if Smoke can't get the money? I mean, he's got to come up with all the money in less than a month. I can't see no way he's going to be able to do that.
But he's been in some tough spots before. I reckon it'll work out all right.
What if he don't?
What you mean?
What if he don't get the money? Then he'll lose the ranch. And if he does, where will we go? What will become of us?
Cal, are you worried about Smoke, or are you worried about us?
I guess I'm worried about both.
Well, at least you're honest about it. Truth is, I don't know what'll become of us.
You know what I think? I think we ought to leave.
Leave? You mean just run out on Smoke and Miss Sally?
No, not run out on them. Just leave. So they don't have to feed us or worry about us.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
I think we ought to go now.
You mean just leave without so much as a fare thee well?
Yeah. Think about it, Pearly. If we stick around long enough to tell them goodbye, you know what they're going to do. They're going to try and talk us into staying on.
Well, maybe they need us to stay on.
No. Right now, we're a burden to them. I know how it is, Pearly. I was on my own when I was 12 because I didn't have no family to speak of, and I didn't want to be a burden to nobody.
All right. We'll go. But I ain't going without leaving them a letter. There ain't no way I'm going to just run out on them. Not after all the things they've done for us.
I agree. The least we can do is leave them a letter telling them what happened to us.
Smoke!
What is it? What's happened?
They're gone.
Who's gone? What are you talking about?
It's Pearly and Cal. I went into the bunkhouse to call them for breakfast, and they weren't there. And all their stuff was gone. I found this lying on Pearly's bunk.
Smoke read the letter.
Dear Smoke and Miss Sally, by the time you get this letter, me and Cal will be gone. We figure, what with all the problems you're having with the ranch and all, you don't really need two more mouths to feed. And since you ain't got no cows to speak of, why, there ain't enough work to justify you keeping us on just so you can feed us. We're both grateful for all the good things you two has done for us, for all the good times we've had together. I know you ain't either one of you old enough to be our parents, but it's almost like that's just what you are, the way you took care of us and looked out for us for all this time. I hope you can save the ranch somehow. We'll be looking in now and again to see how it is that you're faring, and if we see that you got the ranch all put back together again, why, we'll come back and work for you again. Well, fact is, if we can find work now, why, me and Cal has both said that we'll be sending some money along to help you out. Your good friends, Pearly and Cal.
I can't believe that they would do something like this to us.
Oh, Smoke, I don't think they believe they're doing it to us. I think they believe they're doing it for us.
Well, that's just it. They didn't think. That means you're going to be here all alone while I'm gone. Will you be all right?
Why, Kirby Jensen, how dare you ask me such a question?
You're right. That was pretty stupid of me. I pity the poor fool who would try and break in here while I'm gone.
Did you pack your white shirt and jacket? I think you should wear that when you talk to the broker.
I packed it. It's a long ride to Denver. I'll be gone for at least 2 weeks, maybe a little longer. I'll send you a telegram when I get there, just to let you know that I've arrived all right. Then I'll send you another one when I get something worked out with the broker.
I'll miss you terribly, but I'll be here when you get back. I'll spend the time while you are gone getting the line house ready for us. I intend to move some of my favorite pieces of furniture down there.
How are you going to move them with Pearlie and Cal gone?
I'll go into the town and ask Mr. Longmont to find someone to help me. Don't worry. I'll take care of it.